Parkcast, the UK's original theme park podcast.
Welcome back to Parkcast, park fans. We're a theme park podcast. We are all theme park fans here, and we love chatting about things going on in the theme park industry. We're here every week. I'm Bex. This is Kev.
Hi, everyone.
And we're joined by Kip Hakes again.
Hello.
And you're with us for a special reason today, because we are talking about VIP park experiences, and you have had one very recently. You've paid for it. I mean, you weren't just treated like a VIP.
No.
Red carpet.
No, I mean,
not
to be
that
honest.
Kind.
Roll out the red carpet.
No, I mean, I don't think Merlin like me very much as a company at the moment for things that I've said on this podcast and also off this podcast. But no, I was a paying punter. And that actually was a bit of a problem, because I went on the Chessington behind the scenes of the Toon Blaster, and I saw it, and I was like, because I had sort of said to myself, I wasn't going to do any Merlin parks this year, just as my little sort of protest against how they treated the entertainment staff. But when this came up, I loved the Fifth Dimension. I loved the Terror Toon. They're very formative rides for me. And really, as well as the Bubble Works, they really got me into dark rides and themed experiences like that. So I kind of thought, I will be so sad if like they stop doing it after a short amount of time and I've missed out. So I swallowed my pride slightly and thought, well, I will pay for it. But I discovered that you can only book in pairs. Well, the minimum booking is two.
Oh.
Yeah. So I went on the website. I was like, as soon as it went on there, I was like, I'm going to book this. I want to go.
Yep.
And yeah, you can only book for a minimum of two people. Okay. And it also says on the website, you have to have like an annual pass or theme park tickets for the day. And I've got an annual pass. My wife, Vicky, doesn't have an annual pass. And I was like, well, I don't mind paying the £60 for her to do the tour with me. But then I've got to pay like another £40 for a day ticket for her as well.
It
quickly ramped up in price. And, you know, as much as I love my wife and I wouldn't have minded paying, the thing is also as well, she would have been interested, but she's not like a theme park nerd. So I was kind of like, it just seems a lot of money. And then I mentioned this on Instagram and a few people sort of slid into my DMs and was like, if you email the VIP experience team at Chessington and say you're a single person and want to go on a tour alone, they will get all your details and send you a payment link so you can actually pay and go on your own. So that is a top tip if you're a single person. Yeah, so that's what I did.
But that also begs the question, why have the restriction in the first place to say you have to book as a pair?
I don't know. Maybe if I'd have booked on a day when someone else wasn't doing it, they might not have let me do it on my own. But they did tell me that the first person to do the tour the week before was just one person on their own. So I don't know.
Crazy. We don't make the rules. We try and follow them, but that's another made-up rule.
The ever-changing rules that we have to keep dealing with.
This is the most ridiculous thing about it. It actually happens when the park closes. When the park is closed. So you meet at the hotel. I think my meeting time was 6:30. So you didn't need a theme park ticket anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't it close at like 5?
Yeah, the park closed at 5 that day. So I went for like a bit of the afternoon and I sort of left the park and just kind of had to mill around and find somewhere that I could maybe fly my drone over Chessington from later. But that's another story. I was just ambling around. And yeah, they just take you in the back entrance where you can get in by the hotel.
So to speak.
After the park closed. Yeah, exactly. That's another story.
Friendly podcast.
And I didn't even need a ticket in the first place, and they didn't even check to see if I had an annual pass
to get the
booking discount as well. So if you
had paid for Vicky, you'd have actually been quite fuming, actually.
And
she would have been if you'd dragged her around Chessington again for the umpteenth time.
Yeah.
kicking and screaming.
Yeah. And so that was a little bit frustrating. You know, I can obviously understand it for like the VIP experiences, like at the zoo bit, and you feed the animals during the day.
Yeah.
But that was a bit frustrating. So yeah, but there you go, some useful information.
Well, right, yeah, there. That I mean, top tips as always. Let's just look at this as a whole. So these VIP experiences, these are fairly new to us in UK theme parks. And I think, I don't know if it was Merlin or Blackpool who did it first for the track walks. I want to say it was actually Blackpool Pleasure Beach started the Walk the Big One as a paid for experience quite a few years ago.
Yeah.
Merlin very quickly followed suit, saw it as an opportunity, make money, why not? And you had Walk Oblivion, Walk Wicker Man. They've done the Thought ones. You did Walk the Swarm.
Yeah, I was just seeing when I actually did the Swarm one, because I did that in August 2017.
Okay, yeah. So that was before the Alton Towers ones then.
Yeah, I think it was. I think it was one of the first things they did. I think at the time they were offering Colossus and Swarm, and I did get gifted that one. Ad disclosure, etc.
Hashtag ad.
See, I have a feeling that Alton Towers have done them way back when, because I remember Hex VIP walk look arounds are not a new thing.
Oh, really? Oh, really?
Yeah, and I'm sure you've been able to do them in the past before Wicker Man. But I do feel like Blackpool's is probably still first.
Yeah.
I feel like that must be first in my head.
Yeah, it was quite a big
thing. I haven't
got
a particular date in my brain.
No.
I've got a lot of useless theme park dates and stuff in my brain. That one I can't think.
I mean,
as
an outsider, it seems like a sensible thing to do. They have these attractions. They have people like us who are very interested in these attractions. They can charge us lots of money to go and do things that are not readily available to do. And we will probably part with our money to go and do these things. But they do seem to be becoming more and more prevalent.
Mm.
You can go and experience more and more things. And I will say they are getting more expensive.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we'll mention a few of them in this episode, but I do want to focus on your Toon Blaster experience just because it's the most recent one.
Yeah.
And we're going to do that, the classic poo sandwich here, I think, with this episode, because we have been, and I think, you know, fairly quite critical of Chessington this year and some of the decisions they've made.
Absolutely.
And you've also gone and you've paid, you know, extra money to go and do this VIP experience. So, you know, I don't think anyone could come and say, well, you're just negative on Chessington and you don't actually know anything about the park. You have paid, even though you have an annual pass, you've had to pay extra to go and do this experience at Chessington. And Chessington is a park that UKIP say you grew up with.
Yep.
You know, it's a very special place to you. You don't want to be anti-Chessington or negative about Chessington. You want it to be a fantastic theme park.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I remember it being a fantastic theme park, you know, as Kev does as well. And so, yeah, it just gives me an overall feeling of sadness how it is and how it looks. And I actually, like, because I had my sort of afternoon there, it just really depressed me. And when the park and ride sort of started shutting at 5, I just left there and was just milling around, just feeling quite sad about how it is now. And I look, if I ever mention this, people go, oh yeah, but the Paw Patrol land will be opening next year and Minecraft the year after. And yes, that's absolutely true. They will be, but it doesn't mean that you should have a rubbish time there now for something good that's coming next year and the year after.
Mm.
They've not changed the ticket prices. They're increasing the cost of the car park and they're giving you a very subpar day out. And it just makes me so sad. But like, even some of the things, like, I thought, because there was loads of like school kids there and generally lots of school kids in general, I thought, oh, I might have a bit of a later lunch there. So around about 3 o'clock, I thought, I'll just go and grab something to eat. So I went to the Burger Kitchen by Transylvania. It was shut. They'd closed it. I thought, yeah, oh, maybe it hasn't opened today. So I went round to like the fish and chip place by the pirate ship and looked on the menu. That was still open, but it didn't have anything vegetarian there. So I was like, okay, fine. I will go and get some pasta pizza. I walked round to pasta pizza. That had closed for the day as well.
Oh, no.
So I just had to sit and eat a rather sad vegan hot dog on a bench just thinking, this is horrible. This is my dreadful life? Yeah, exactly.
Why am I here?
Yeah, exactly. And it is, and there were like people walking up to the restaurant going, what? It's closed? What?
Why
and
is you know, it closed?
They had kids. And obviously, I guess because it's sort of school trip season, they think there's probably lots of packed lunches and things.
Yeah.
So maybe that's a sort of slightly business decision, but like the burger kitchen, I don't know.
It's weird, isn't it? Was it raining as well, Kip, while you're there?
No,
I can just picture you sat on this bench eating a hot dog. It was torrential rain. Like,
it was a lovely day, and I was sort of sat on this bench in Adventure Point, and I was looking over, and they have like a big display screen that's meant to show the screen times, but it just was full of flashing pixels, and it was just dead. And I was just, it looked like a modern art installation. and I just kind of thought, oh man, I really hope this tour is good. And it was. The tour was great.
Okay, well, we will come to the good bit.
Yes.
Before the Chessington fans get really angry with us. We don't want to face them again. They are scary. But I do, I said at the start of the year, I'm not going to Chessington this year because I don't have a Merlin annual pass. And frankly, it's not worth my money to take my four-year-old there this year. When I've got other options like Paulton's, like Drayton, even like Pleasure Beach. Yeah, there's more that she can go and do there. And I'd rather go there. But just give us an overview of how the park does look with obviously these two areas of the park closed at the moment for refurbishment, and how does it feel overall?
So when you're sort of walking around where Mexicana once stood, there's just very, very tall, overbearing hoardings with sort of, you know, it's got Paw Patrol stuff printed on it, and it's colorful, but it's just like this big, almost Berlin Wall-esque thing, you know. And they, you know, they bring out like Paw Patrol characters every so often, and you can meet them in front of the wall, but it just feels so bleak.
Yeah.
And then, and it's sort of quite a lot of it is just surrounded by this sort of construction fence. And then obviously Wild Asia is out as well. And there's not any kind of big fencing out. It's just sort of closed off, and Wild Asia's got a big gate leading to it. So I had a little peek through that, and you know, it's just destruction, you know. It looks terrible. It looks like a war zone because it did have that kind of vibe anyway. and yeah, it just felt really sad. And I think also because like a lot of the sort of paint, sort of scenic theming and all that kind of stuff, that looked a bit sad as well. So it didn't feel like they'd gone like, okay, well, we're going to have a rubbish few years, let's make everything else look brilliant. Just generally around the park, it just felt very bleak and sad. And if they'd have thrown loads of money into lots of improvements, because they have been doing that over the past few years, you know, they've sort of put new flooring around and put like the sort of fun day out stuff in the flooring, and it's looked really good. But this year it just seems to have taken a bit of a nosedive, and they've taken their eye off the ball a bit. But that's happened at Thorpe Park as well, you know. They had the big Project Sparkle and made a big thing of that, and then this sort of close season it was very minimal. So it does feel like they have kind of spent less across the Merlin portfolio on just the sort of general upkeep across all the parks, which is sad because it really makes a difference.
And the problem you've got is how enclosed all the areas are together.
Yeah.
So it's really noticeable, isn't it, Kip, walking around when things are being done. You can't really escape it. It's so noticeable. Whereas, say, like at Alton Towers, for example, if they're building something new or there's a whole new area going up, it's kind of almost out of the way. You could almost walk past it and not even notice, depending on where you're going.
Yeah.
The problem with Chessington is one of those entrances right by where Wild Asia is. So as soon as you walk in, Dragon's Fury is in front of you.
Probably.
But then to the left, it's there, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can't help but notice it wherever you go.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
And then, like, when you walk around from sort of Tiger Rock as well, because that all links up, you know, that's closed off as well. Yeah. It's just quite a sad experience. Mm. And I really wish that they'd have sort of staggered it slightly better.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, whatever.
Why do that? Yeah. I mean, I've seen some videos of like fence just literally crumbling apart. You know, people have sent me videos of where they touched a fence and it like it disintegrates in their hands, which is, you know, not great for kids at all. Was Croc Drop spinning? That's the big question.
No, Croc Drop was not spinning. I went on that and I kind of knew that it wouldn't be spinning, but yeah, because I'd seen loads of people going, yeah, it's back spinning again. And I was like, oh, okay, that might be fun, because I've never experienced it spinning. And then no, it wasn't spinning. But someone said to me, sometimes it just stops working during the day and that's it. You know, sometimes it'll start working at the beginning of the day and you just kind of think, oh man, people have paid for this.
And you mentioned the school trips being there. How are the queues? Because this was the thing that worried me about those two areas being shut, that there just would be so much less to soak up capacity.
Yeah, well, the queues were all right. I mean, I must admit, in my time when I was actually in the park, I was sort of going for almost like a content creation point of view, get some video footage. You know, I've got a few ideas for some shorts to make, and I just wanted a bit of B-roll and stuff. So I wasn't sort of smashing through all the rides. I was essentially seeing what had a short queue.
Yeah.
And sort of running with it if I could. But like, Vampire was closed for almost all of the day.
Oh, no.
And I think it opened about 4-ish. And so like, I thought I want to go on Vampire, because the thing is, you never know if you're going to go on these rides again, because that could be it. You know, who knows with how they work. So yeah, I went and joined the queue, and obviously quite a few of the school kids had gone home by that point because they don't stay super late. But yeah, the queue line filled with children. And I got to the front of the queue pretty quickly and the ride broke down again. So I was in that dark bit of the queue line just as you're sort of going into the ride station. And I was just surrounded by screaming children. And it was horrible. It was horrible.
Sensory overload.
But the fact that Vampire was down for most of the day and Dragon's Fury was having a lot of downtime that day, it really does bump up the queues. I mean, they were sort of like an hour or so or whatever, maybe a bit longer in different places. But if you're going there as a school trip, that's a lot of time of your day gone just by standing around. And kids don't like standing around waiting. So, yeah, it did feel quite depressing, really.
And I think we mentioned this a lot. It's always important to remember that, you know, you had that experience as a Merlin pass holder. You didn't technically pay to go in. You know, you pay for your pass. You still have to pay your ULEZ charge, don't you?
Yeah.
But if a family had gone on that day and spent a couple of £100, non-Merlin pass holders, you've got the two areas of the park closed. You've got Vampire down most of the day. Like, this is what we were kind of saying with these two areas being closed. It's not just about that. When the park has a bad day operationally elsewhere, you are so limited then as to what you've got left when you've closed two areas.
Was Mandrill Mayhem operating okay?
Yeah, that seemed to be doing all right. Although, you know, I went to go and film that, and for some reason at the point where I was standing outside the ride waiting to film it, it took them about 10 or so minutes to, like, between rides. So, you know, they weren't, I was just standing there waiting with my camera, like, yeah, it's going to go in a second. Yeah, want to get the shot. Oh, no. And I very nearly walked off because it was just running slowly. That I don't know whether they were just having some issues with people in the queue or getting the trains loaded or whatever, but yeah, it was running okay, but there were a few sort of moments where I sort of saw various rides there down.
Yeah.
But anyway, enough of me moaning. Shall we talk about VIP experience?
Well, that's
how I felt like a VIP.
Want to know,
well, I want to know at what point the carpet came out. So you the park closed at 5. You had to leave the park, or could you stay in?
No, I left the park, and you know, because the meeting point for it was in the hotel.
Okay,
so you know you had to go out, and the sort of instructions are kind of said park in the sort of hotel car park area, and so I just sort of milled around and made some, you know, video stuff and went and found a good drone spot, and then just went back into the hotel, and there was another two enthusiasts there. And
that's interesting. So they were enthusiasts, you think?
Well, yeah, very, very, very much so. I think like one of them had a Wicker Man hoodie on, and some, I think the guy had another theme park hoodie. So, you know, you can spot our people, can't you? And you know, socially awkward, and we're all sort of all looking at our phones and trying to ignore each other. And then sort of just after 6:30, like four or five members of Chessington staff came out and sort of introduced themselves, and they handed out lanyards with plastic phone covers that you have to wear around your neck. You've got to keep your phone in a pouch, because obviously if you're going in the ride area, there's lots of drops and things. So you've got to keep your phone secure. And yeah, we just then made our way round through the closed park, which is always lovely to do, and went round and sort of started the tour.
So did you have any expectations for this experience?
I didn't really. I mean, I'd been told that people who'd done the sort of tours at Alton Towers were sort of told very explicitly no photos of the op cabin or the control panel or anything like that. So I was expecting that, and I was maybe expecting them to be sort of, don't take pictures of that, or don't take pictures of the broken scenery. But we weren't allowed to take pictures in the operator cabin. We were given a very long sort of chat in there and looked at all the buttons, and they explained everything and how it works. And I also learned that when they e-stop that ride, all the restraints pop open. So if there's an e-stop, they don't actually e-stop it. They do something else to stop the ride, so the restraints don't go flying open, because they don't want people getting out and falling into the pits and things, you know. So yeah, that was quite interesting. And they were also telling us that the boulder scenery item that's been broken for years is sort of being repaired at the moment. The engineers are sort of working on it. I get the feeling on sort of on their own time to try and get it working again, because it's quite an old complex mechanism with ropes and pulleys and things. And yeah, they're working on that and hoping to have that done this year. But yeah, there were no photos in that bit or videos. But as soon as we were out of there, they were like, we want you to take as many photos and videos as you like. Get pictures of everything. It's cool. The more you take, the happier we are. It actually freaks us out when people don't take photos and videos. So just go crazy. And, you know, they had sort of spots around the ride where they could take pictures of you with your phone for you. And so that was really, really nice. And we weren't in any way rushed around at all. I think I was out of the park by like just before 8:30, and we could have stayed in there longer if we'd have sort of been wanting to take more photos, but it was just so chill. And they were very clearly sort of people who knew the ride. The main guy there, whose name I've forgotten, he was incredible, and he used to be a ride operator, and so he knew loads and loads of stuff. But I was such a nerd, man. I was so nerdy. And I was sort of, I wasn't like correcting things that they were saying, but I was sort of adding things because I know the fifth dimension and Terra Tomb so well. And I was like, meh, 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 meh. And then I was kind of like, oh, shut up, Kit. Come on, mate.
You see, that's the beauty of doing a dark ride
experience
compared to, say, like a track walk, I guess, is because once you've been to the top of the lift hill, you come back down again.
Yeah.
And that's kind of it. Whereas I guess with the dark ride, the advantage you've got is you could spend a lot more time going round, because there's probably more things, depending on what ride it is, but there's more things to be able to see, I guess, and look at. And
I don't want to give any spoilers away, really, but there are sort of themed items from the Terra Tomb that are just literally sort of undercover on the floor out of view.
Okay.
So there's two bits of kind of theming from that ride that are still there, but they're just sort of on the floor where you can't see them. And we were sort of able to stick our head over and look down, and they're covered up, which was quite sad. But yeah, it's just kind of nice to know that those things are there, and it's stuff that you wouldn't ever see because you'd never be on that position. And also they have actually invested in the sort of evacuation platforms around the ride that you walk on for the tours themselves, because they've sort of have to get them up to a certain standard before you can actually just have people walking around them as an experience rather than just them being for evacuation. So there was quite a lot of new flooring in places in readiness to do the tour, which was quite interesting. But that led to a problem where like the new flooring wasn't painted black. It was just a wood color. So they hadn't actually sort of themed it into the ride. So you'd see it straight away if you were on the ride. So yeah, it was really, really good. It was fascinating, but there was a lot of, oh yeah, so this element used to do that. And this used to happen and it doesn't anymore. And like, I felt the guides were sort of almost slightly embarrassed at some of the things. And, it just felt a bit sad. And I'd been on the ride earlier in the day, so I knew what was working, what wasn't. And yeah, there's a lot of stuff that isn't working. They have spent a lot of time adjusting the lighting and making it look good and sound good. Nick Hudson's soundtrack sounds fantastic, but like a lot of the effects aren't working. Mm. And that's a bit sad.
It's always been the case for years, hasn't it? When they did their kind of TLC of it, when they added Nick's score into it, and I thought it improved it a lot. They obviously they redid the lighting, so the lighting was a lot better. But again, it's these things we've mentioned so many times on the podcast, isn't it, about consistently keeping these things up to date. Don't do it leave it five years before the next time you do it. Yeah. You've got to keep on top of these effects, because otherwise, like you say, you know they'd start breaking again, and you've got to spend even more money in a bigger chunk of money to kind of fix those problems you've kind of left. And it's always sad to see, isn't it?
Yeah. And that was kind of, and also with sort of the lights on, you know, it was like leaving a club at the end of the night, and you sort of really faced what was there. And, you know, you could see bits of wall that had fallen down, and there was a sort of big gaping hole, and it was just like, yeah, it does need a lot of work. And even like the ride carriages as well, they've got really nice painting and theming on them, but it's all kind of chipped away and broken, and in the sort of cold light of the house lights on, it's just like, oh dear.
That would be my thing about a dark ride, and this is what surprised me with the Valhalla one, which is, we've mentioned on the podcast, very expensive. Surely the magic of a dark ride is not knowing how it works. But I don't know, like, Kev, you're a massive dark ride fan. Is there something in you that goes, yeah, but I want to see how it works?
Yes and no, I guess. I've been able to walk around, not Curse at Old Manor, it was Jewel at the time, and that was really interesting from a same point of view, like Kip is saying with Toon Blaster, because there are so many things you go, oh, that look at the beautiful artwork that you can't normally see when it's really dark. And there's certain things, because it's so dark, sometimes you miss things that years ago they painted and did stuff to that looks amazing, and it's really nice to see it. Yeah. On the other hand, like someone had mentioned to me about doing, because I know at Disneyland Paris, they do an experience with Twilight Zone Tower of Terror, and getting to experience that and getting to see all the bits. But there's a part of me that said, actually, I don't want to. Because there's some rides like that where I actually prefer not knowing how it works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the illusion of being on there going, how on earth do these things work? Yeah. You know, I quite like that. I don't want to go backstage and see, oh, if I go through this door, there's a coffee machine. There's like staff, all their like stuff. And it's like, no, this is meant to be an authentic hotel from the 1930s. I don't want to see all the modern stuff in it. So actually, I think it depends. I think it does depend on some things. I think I'd prefer some things to be left to the imagination, or me going, I've got no idea how they do that.
Yeah. I think with Toon Blaster, it's sort of, because it's not overly high tech, you've got a rough idea of how things work anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, when the mummies pop out, there's a hydraulic behind them popping them out that doesn't work anymore. And like where there's a scene where there's someone like throwing something at you and it pops out of the wall, you know, same kind of thing, and sound effects, and they have like air cannons and stuff like that. But again, all broken. And so I think that was the saddest part about it, was there was so much going on there, but so much of it wasn't working anymore. And that And that was sort of quite sad, really. But equally, at the end of the tour, when you go back into, because you start the tour in the sort of market area of the queue line, once you finish the tour, you go back there and they take you behind a door that you could sort of see from the queue line. And in there is part of the old Fifth Dimension queue. And oh, wow. I've seen the queue line in pictures. I had pictures on my phone that I was showing them of the Fifth Dimension that I have saved on my cloud storage of like how things were then. And yeah, so I walked into this room and it's got no lights in it at all. And it's used as a store cupboard, but there is just a big chunk of Fifth Dimension queue line just there behind the wall, painted in the silver, blue and red, very 90s, with sort of a bit of the original staircase that was there. And I actually, that bit actually made me feel quite emotional, because the last time I'd stood in that room was sort of in the late 90s with my mum and dad. And that was just so weird being back there. I mean, obviously the whole ride is all of what was there back then as well, but just to sort of see it almost frozen in time, it was quite moving, really. And to be honest, I would have happily spent 60 quid just to go in that room and hang around in that room, because it really moved me. You know, they were sort of saying, okay, so when this was the Fifth Dimension, this was this bit. When it was Terra Tomb, it was this bit. And that was great, because, you know, I remembered it all. But almost being in that little spot, the sort of cupboard area, was just so, yeah, it was just so strange. And I think that was the best part of the tour for me. And I had a stupid grin on my face the whole way around. Like the pictures the staff took of me in the different areas, I've just got the biggest grin because I'm so happy. But being in that dark cupboard with a nice man from Chessington with a torch, I've never felt happier. I'm sorry, children.
Well, but you know, that kind of sums it up when we talk a lot about why do we feel the way we do sometimes about theme parks nowadays. It's because we are clinging on to this nostalgia that we had, and we want to feel what we felt when we went to these parks when we were kids, when everything seemed magical. We weren't paying for entry because our parents were, and everything was just amazing to us back then. So I guess what that gave you is just a little portal back to that moment in time, and that's why.
Exactly. And you know what, talking about the cost of it, it's £75 for a non-pass holder, £60 for a pass holder. I kind of felt that was fair enough for the experience I got for the amount of time we had. Yeah, I felt very happy. And also the fact that there were like five Chessington staff there doing the tour with us, and there was only three of us doing the tour. I mean, I'd do the tour while you can, because they're going to work out that that's costing them more money than they're actually making, for sure. But on the other hand, Chessington has got an experience of going behind the scenes of Mandrill Mayhem, and that's £150.
Yeah.
Why? And there's no lift hill.
No,
there's mentioned no, it last time.
There's no Where lift do you hill. Go? you know, you can sort of probably get in the ride area and have a look at everything close up. Mm-hmm. But with that one, you do get a go on the ride. But is that goes? Worth? Yeah, exactly. But is that worth it, really?
It was like an hour. You get like half an hour of unlimited ride time on it and a tour, maybe 100 and something. Not so bad.
But yeah, like you say, there's no lift hill. There's not really any sort of a platform that you can go on where the launches are before you go up the sort of the helix. But yeah, there's not really much you can do. And that I kind of thought, yeah, this is actually really fairly priced. And then you look at the Mandrill Mayhem, you think, what are you smoking, lads? Seriously. But like they also do tours around the park when it's closed, and they're relatively cheap as well. You get to go on a little bus and get to drive around the park while it's closed. And I think that's really cool, because going around a theme park when it's closed is one of my favorite things. And it's something that I've felt so lucky to do.
Yeah.
I've done it sort of Alton Towers, Thorpe Park, Chessington. And it is just such Owen Poulton's, and it's such a weird kind of experience, but it's so
Yeah.
nice and almost soul cleansing. And to sort of be able to go around on a little bus and do that, and have, I think they do a walking tour as well. That is just lovely. And that's not very expensive either. I think that's like £40 ish, which is really nice and a good add-on to a day. If you're a family going there, you get sort of to do something cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the pricing for that tour at least is absolutely bang on and very fair.
Yeah, it's kind of sad if you say, like, there's only a couple of you on it. And I guess it is kind of niche to want to do behind the scenes of Toon Blaster, because it's a ride that you've grown up with through its various guises, but for a lot of people it's just a shooting dark ride, and they'd rather do a track walk or something like that, or see a roller coaster. So maybe they need to link that in with the closed park tour, and as part of the closed park tour you go and see Toon Blaster or something like that, to make it a bit more, because people will go and see it and probably find it interesting, but maybe not think that they are interested enough to pay the £75 just outright. But maybe if they link it all in, that could be a winner for them. But yeah, I think you've kind of touched on the nerve of why we're all confused about some of these VIP experiences, because they do vary so much in price. And on one hand, you have something that's really good value, and then the next minute, something seems way overpriced. The Blackpool example is a classic example of that. £250 to go and see behind the scenes of Valhalla, which doesn't include your park entry either. But earlier in the year, they did a full come and see behind the scenes of Blackpool Pleasure Beach, and I think it was £35. It's just, what? How have we gone from one extreme to another? And I think their big one, Walk the Tracks, that are reasonably priced for the experience. And then, I don't know, it's almost like the parks are saying, how far can we push this? How much are these nerds going to shell out for these experiences? And I'm guessing it is nerds who are going to book them. And I, don't get me wrong, I'm putting myself fully in that nerd category. Nerds and content creators, are the general public going to be interested enough to pay these
That's what
prices?
I wondered, yeah.
I
Because
don't.
surely the content creator stuff gives them the gets their stuff out there, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I mean, maybe sort of doing like the Hyperia walk would be quite interesting for members of the general public, to say they've climbed like the tallest roller coaster in the UK. Yeah, and also you get some smashing views from up there. I mean, doing the Swarm walk years ago, you'd got some amazing views. You could see Wembley. It was a lovely, sunny, clear day, and you could just see for miles around, and we got some really nice photos of the park from up there. And so, yeah, but I don't know how appealing it is across the board for the general public, but they are putting these things on, so they obviously know that there's a market for it. But it might just be really for people like us and content creators, because you get to sort of see things from a unique angle, and people want to, like, other nerds will want to see it, but they might not live near or might not be able to afford to go. So they will happily consume the content that you've made. So, yeah, it's a bit of a strange one, really.
Yeah, I think for me, it's the VIP stuff that it kind of grates on me. This idea of VIP, so am I not? Because I'm not experiencing Nemesis behind the scenes, or Hex behind the scenes, or because I've not climbed the top of Hyperia, does that mean that I'm not classed now as important?
Yes.
And is it only, yeah, is
You're
it?
the peasants
I know
now.
exactly. Do you realize how long I've been visiting this park for, and I'm still not a VIP? Can't believe it. How much money I've invested into these parks over the years. And that's what that I but that's just me noticing it, and I'm walking past going, "Ah, am I well, where does that put me then?" And
Yeah,
is it
but
like a thing where, and again, this is just me viewing it, but like people who post all this stuff out there saying, "Look at me, I've managed to climb to the top of Hyperia. I'm a very important person because I've been able to do it." And it does it. And whether that generates the FOMO, and then people then go, "Well, I don't want to seem like I've not done that yet because other people have. So I'm going to spend however much money to make sure I've shown that I've also done this thing, and it kind of irritates me. It's like the kind of thing, I need to be the first person on the first train, so I'm gonna, it's all that kind of stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
Why the Toxicator opening day was, crazy, because I've got to be on this new flat ride and show that I'm the first person on it.
Yeah,
Yeah?
no,
Was that
I
just me
get.
moaning? I don't know.
No. I do kind of get that, but equally, as we've mentioned before on this podcast, I can be a real fast track princess, and like I love gliding down the fast track queue with my wristband on.
Hide
But
the
yeah, but that's it. And but you sort of, when you're doing that and you're sort of going past and there's like the regular queue, you do often feel like you're being a bit of a prat, because you're just floating around this queue line. They're all standing there. But it's the same with anything in life, isn't it? There's all, like even back to the Titanic, there was a class system where people paid more to be in the first class and people were in the bottom of the boat. And so it's just, I don't know, it's just one of those things, really. But I mean, I wasn't a fast track princess when I went to Chessington that day, because I wasn't going to give them any more money than I absolutely had to.
That's the thing, isn't it?
So,
That,
but
that's
yeah,
why it
I
just
know I.
bothers me. In order to have the best theme park experience, you have to spend even more money. That's how I've always seen
No,
it. Is
absolutely.
you're not going to get the best day unless you spend £90 on a platinum fast pass to get on all these rides, because guess what? You're going to have to queue for hours and hours otherwise.
Yeah,
And
no.
that's, whereas Bex, where were you recently? Which
So I think this is probably a whole new episode actually on fast tracks and if fast tracks are killing theme parks for us, because yeah, I have just come back from Europa where they're not a thing at all and you cannot buy one. And it's interesting to see the impact that has on operations, but let's do another episode on it. And let's look at that, because I'm sure there's people listening who have very strong opinions either way, fast track for or against. So maybe I'll get your guys' opinions on that as well, and we'll do that episode and we'll have that big debate. Is it time for fast track to be?
Well, I've just got up here on the Alton Towers app. So they do a platinum VIP package, which is £340 per person.
Is that the one with the host?
So yeah, so the experience includes your theme park entry, your express car parking, front of line ride access, which, oh, that really gets me. Front of line. Watch out, peasants. I'm coming right to the front of the queue.
I don't call them peasants.
Or non-VIPs. Preferred ride seating. What is that? Preferred ride seating. I'm getting in line for the back. Sorry, we're sitting at the back. You can't. VIP host, Coca-Cola Freestyle vessel, VIP merch, a limited digital photo pass, and a meal voucher. That's £340 per person. So that's an Alton Towers VIP
I wonder if anyone's bought that yet.
package.
I've not seen anyone who appears to be on that package when I've been there recently. I'm interested to know. If you know anyone who's bought that package, let us know in the comments.
But unless I'm a celebrity walking around, if I was to buy this, I would feel awful, like going to the front, like watch out. And then I was like, "Who are you?" And like, "I'm just Kev. I've just spent £340 for the privilege to
I
get to the front
know
of this
this
ride."
sounds so awful, but if I had the money, I would.
Would you?
Not at Alton Towers for the reasons we've discussed many times before, but if I had the money, I would do that. I wouldn't do it like all the time, but I'd just do it for the experience, because it's nice to have experiences, but equally, like Kev says, I think they need to be thinking more about all the guests rather than the VIP guests. Yeah, I think that'll make for quite an interesting topic.
I've got a big birthday coming up in October, so if anyone fancies treating me, I'm not gonna see, I know, if someone was to
But you're
buy it
saying if
me,
someone bought it for you wouldn't mind it.
well, it's difficult then to say, I can't accept this gift, can I?
So you'd only do it out of politeness, is what you're saying. You wouldn't pay for it yourself, but
It's a difficult one. I would feel really awkward. I mean, I guess if someone spent £70 to go backstage, hex, That's a different thing, isn't it? But the yeah, don't spend £340 on me to do that.
Don't worry, I wasn't
No.
going to.
Oh,
Oh,
okay. Well, that's your pressure
spoiler alert.
cancelled then.
Come on, mate.
What about if they did a Curse Vault Manor VIP tour? Would you book onto it?
I would, but I don't think they'd ever really do it because the track is so fragile
Oh, here we go with your sensibleness about
they would
it.
not, they would, yeah. This is why even like when I went round with when I did go around Jewel was it was literally me and someone else because it's the track is very, very fragile and it will break very easily. So people walking around is probably not in their best
We
interests,
don't need anything
unfortunately.
else causing issues with that,
No,
right?
absolutely not. And they'll
Okay.
just have me moaning about like why is that effect not
Yeah.
working?
Why is the floor
Fetch me my
broken?
toolkit.
Oh,
I
it
will
was
fix
me.
it.
Okay, so in summary, Kip, the Toon Blaster VIP tour, worth it.
Yes, absolutely.
Anything
Definitely.
else you want to add into it?
I think something I've noticed and people have commented to me before, especially my sort of followers who are disabled or less abled, is all of these VIP tours or most of them aren't very accessibility friendly.
Okay.
So for example, obviously you need to be fit and able to climb a lift hill, but there are sort of say aspects of the Hyperia tour that could be accessible. So, you could see in the ride station sort of out of hours and just not climb up the lift hill, or it's little things like that. And there are points of the track walk for Toon Blaster where the walkways are very, very narrow and tight, and you sort of have to shuffle past like in single file because there's just massive, massive drops and things like that. So yeah, I think that is one of the disappointing things about these VIP experiences. They're not necessarily designed for those less abled in mind, and there could be maybe sort of slightly pared down versions of behind the scenes stuff where they could see areas that are accessible and still get a bit of the talk and a bit of the chat, but obviously not do the overly physical thing. So I think if they want to really appeal to a broad spectrum of people, that needs to be thought about. And I don't think it is at the moment.
Okay.
Good point. Good
And
point.
how many of these are available, Kip, like throughout the year? Because I noticed like when you look at the Hex one, for example, there's only like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 days at the minute for the rest of the season that you can do one on.
Well,
So how many are available?
When I looked at the Toon Blaster one, they are just seem to be running them like on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, like throughout the summer. I mean, I wanted to be one of the first people because, like I said earlier, you don't know how long these things are going to last. If they're not popular and people don't book onto them, then they will go, and or they work out that they're probably not making as much money as they could be from them, they will go. So I didn't actually look too far ahead, really. I'll be completely honest with you. I was very much focused on the dates that I could go, and I just wanted to be it to be as soon as possible. But yeah, obviously, if because it's only running on a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, it might not be suitable for everyone, for example. It might be that they're doing different tours on different days, and it's the same sort of behind the scenes crew doing it, but they do different tours each day, So, yeah, I think it's one of those things that if you want to do one and you're thinking about doing it, get it booked ASAP because it might disappear and that could be your last chance. And that's why I thought, okay, I've got to hang my morals on the door slightly. I've never done anything like that before, and just swallow it and go and do it while I can, because I would actually actively regret that for the rest of my life not doing it if I didn't.
See, one of the best ones I think that people haven't really mentioned is the you can do the tour of the gardens and the towers for £10, and that's like a 2 hour kind of tour. But again, that's a very niche one, isn't it? Because again, you're appealing to the people who are interested. I just think like a 2 hour, 2 hours is quite a good length of time. for £10 to get to go into the towers, which you can't really go into anymore because
No.
they've always been like kind of blocked off from as a season.
Yeah,
But yeah.
that one, whilst the price point is very fair for that one, it does irk me somewhat because, I remember being able to walk around the towers. I've got lots of pictures from inside the towers. I mean, obviously there are and always have been areas that you haven't been able to access, whatever time of the year it is. But that is a fair price, but they obviously they sort of their point is that they can't have the towers open all the time because the general public, they can't put up CCTV in there and they get people urinating in there, they get people destroying things and scratching the walls and scratching sort of old ancient things. So I don't know. I understand why they do those tours and I think they are exceptional value for money. But I just wish that it wasn't a paid for thing and you could still roam the towers, but people are
That they are.
knobheads.
And on that bombshell, well, look, I think it's a fascinating discussion. I'm really glad that you had a good time there because I know that Chessington is a park that means a lot to you, and I know that you were not best pleased about the way that it was going. So at least you've had a good experience there. We are all
Yes.
keeping our fingers crossed that in the next 2 years, Chessington is going to turn a massive corner and start to become the place that we all know and love again. In the meantime, at least you have the option of a VIP experience like this, which may restore your faith a little bit in the park. If you are feeling like Kip, like it's not quite the place it used to be, at least you can see some of that. But let me know your thoughts. What are your thoughts on VIP experiences? Are they something you would do at a theme park? Have you done one? What's the best one that you've done? Let us know in the comments. And we will be doing this fast track episode. We've got to do that. Are you a fast track princess? I'm going to coin that phrase.
That's it now.
Do you glide past the peasants like me in the main queue? Let me know what your thoughts are on fast tracks and we'll cover that as well. Kip, thanks for joining us
No
again.
problem. Love it. Absolutely love it.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, leave us a review, give us a rating, let us know what you think. And if you haven't already, if you subscribe, you're going to get a notification whenever we release a new episode. For now, though, we've been Parkcast.
Parkcast. The UK's original theme park podcast.